The Biden-Harris administration continues to face backlash over them directing FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, to spend all of their resources and money over the last 4 years on illegal aliens. And so they don't have the money or the resources or really the care to help Americans on the East Coast, particularly in North Carolina, in the wake of Hurricane Helene. Here is the little gnome, Karine Jean-Pierre, caught in yet another lie, thanks to the power of video on the internet.
It's just categorically false. No, Biden did not take FEMA relief money to use on migrants.
Well, that's the story today, but just a couple years ago, they were very proud of their diversity efforts.
So FEMA regional administrators have been meeting with city officials on site to coordinate available federal support from FEMA and other federal agencies. Funding is also available through FEMA's Emergency Food and Shelter Program to eligible local governments and non-for-profit organizations upon request to support humanitarian relief for migrants.
For the illegal aliens, for the criminal invaders, the tens of millions of them. Stay tuned, because there's more to come in this video, but real quick, subscribe to my channel if you're new here, because you're not going to get independent analysis and information like this anywhere else. And here is the diversity hire head of FEMA. While surprisingly not a minority, the Biden administration was very proud that she's the first woman to head the organization, denouncing people criticizing them, saying that it's dangerous.
So what kind of impact has this had on the recovery effort?
It has a tremendous impact on the comfort level of our own employees to be able to go out there, but it's also demoralizing to all of the first responders that have been out there in their communities helping people, FEMA staff, volunteers, the private sector that are working side by side with local officials to go out and help people. I need to make sure I can get the resources to where they're needed. And when you have this dangerous rhetoric like you're hearing, it creates fear in our own employees. We need to make sure we're getting help to the people who need it.
And here she is proudly proclaiming that under the Biden-Harris administration, FEMA has a new directive.
What are you and FEMA doing to prioritize equity when it comes to disaster recovery?
Equity, of course, an Orwellian buzzword, meaning to give non-white people, non-heterosexual people, non-Christian people more stuff, more resources, more rights, more of everything.
This is something that I think about every day, and this was one of my priorities when I first came into the agency to serve in this role as FEMA administrator. You know, I took the time to reflect as I was being going through the nomination process about what are the areas that I really wanted to focus on when I came to FEMA in this role.
Not educating people about having a bug out bag or having the emergency supplies based off of their region in order to hopefully ease the pain of a natural disaster or a power outage or some kind of an unfortunate mass event. No, her focus is on equity. Her focus is on helping non-white people and non-American people. I mean, what's next? Are they going to place top priority on illegal alien transgender migrants in order to hopefully prevent people from using their own pronouns when referring to them? Oh, wait, what's this? Well, it's a FEMA director named Riley Hurst.
As Leo mentioned, there were those conversations, not only with migrant trans women. Being a migrant trans woman, there is an undocumented concern. There is also a concern of whether they would trust the people, places that are offering shelter that are faith-based because of the way they've been responded to in the past, then if they are accepted, what would happen in terms of misgendering, in terms of bedrooms and bathrooms, etc.
Okay, a few years ago, well, actually, many years ago at this point, 10 years ago, even under the Obama administration, this would have been considered a parody. This would have been Saturday Night Live hasn't been funny for 30 years. This would have been a funny skit from some YouTube comedians. But unfortunately, this is our reality.
Sparked a few things in my mind, thinking about preparedness and how you said, you know, LGBTQIA people and people who have been disadvantaged already are struggling. They already have their own things to deal with. So you add a disaster on top of that, It's just compounding on itself. And I think that is maybe the why of why we're having these discussions, is because it isn't being talked about. It isn't being socialized. We're not paying attention to this community.
The first thing that comes to their mind when there's a hurricane is, what about the LGBTQ people? And speaking of the rainbow people, Lindsey Graham was on Sean Hannity's show a few days ago, as usual, talking about how FEMA has fumbled the response to Hurricane Helene, but he couldn't stop thinking about Israel.
You know, I've been going all over South Carolina, like most people, I hadn't slept much. But look what's going on in Israel. Our friends in Israel are surrounded by people that want to kill them, destroy them, a second Holocaust in the making.
It goes without saying that Israel's Mossad, which is their version of the CIA, which actually makes the CIA look like a bunch of amateurs in comparison, have some extensive knowledge of Lindsey Graham's personal life. And not the obvious personal life that he just can't admit, but Diddy tape style, Epstein style stuff. At this point, they probably don't even need to show FEMA's website showing their number one goal is instilling equity as the foundation of emergency management, since, well, we heard it right out of the horse's mouth, the diversity hire director. Here's the director of the Department of Homeland Security, which works hand in hand with FEMA, Alejandro Mayorkas, admitting last year that they're wasting our tax dollars on the migrants, and then just a few days ago admitting that they don't have the money for Americans.
FEMA is going to be playing a pivotal role in our shelter and services program that is poised to distribute $363 million to cities and communities in need of funding.
They're the illegal aliens to pay literally for them to just come here and stay in room and board and health care and education and everything else.
We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds to make it through the season.
Oh, well, what a surprise. Just to put things into perspective of how much of our tax dollars are being wasted in order to give the illegal aliens room and board once they break into our country, New York City alone is paying $300 a night, night after night, week after week, month after month, year after year, to house the criminal invaders in high-end four-star hotels in Manhattan. The city of New York has budgeted $1.4 billion in order to do this. And they're not putting them up in some podunk hotel, some little Motel 6 out in some ghetto in one of the other boroughs. No disrespect if you live in that area. This is in Manhattan, the jewel of New York. And in order to try to rehabilitate her image and give her big boost in the final several weeks before the election, she is going on some big podcasts and some big shows this week, including the Call Her Daddy podcast, which is hosted by some floozy who's literally getting paid $20 million a year by Spotify. And here's a description from one of her shows, which I can't even read. You just have to read this for yourself or just pause the video and read that, because it would just be an endless stream of bleeps. This is the show that Kamala Harris is going on in order to reach, well, the Democrat Party's core voter base, single women. This after seeing Donald Trump do some pretty big podcasts and sit down with some popular live streamers as well, like Theo Vaughn, some clown named Aiden Ross, who was like one of the biggest live streamers in the world, who I still can't figure out why anybody would actually tune into a show or what sort of talent he has. But he has a big audience because there are a lot of morons out there. And so Donald Trump sat down with him trying to reach the masses. There's one big podcast, however, that he surprisingly hasn't appeared on because, well, in case you didn't know, Joe Rogan doesn't want to help him at all.
By the way, I'm not a Trump supporter in any way, shape, or form. I've had the opportunity to have him on my show more than once. I've said no every time. I don't want to help him. I'm not interested in helping him.
Now, maybe, just maybe, Joe Rogan will finally surprise us with a pleasant October surprise and actually sit down and talk with the guy. Because by not supporting Donald Trump at this point, it is de facto endorsing and helping communist Kamala. We're talking about a guy who, when he signed his several hundred million dollar deal with Spotify, agreed to quietly allow them to delete several of his more controversial interviews from when he was independent, including one with the great Gavin McGinnis, a guy who posted a 6-minute groveling apology after a compilation of him using the little N-word numerous times over the years from earlier days in his show went viral, and said that white people should never, ever use the little word under any circumstance.
Now, I know that to most people, there's no context where a white person is ever allowed to say that word, never mind publicly on a podcast. And I agree with that now. I haven't said it in years, but for a long time, when I would bring that word up, like if it would come up in conversation, instead of saying the N-word, I would just say the word. I thought as long as it was in context, people would understand what I was doing. But it's not my word to use. My hope is that, look, I can't go back in time and change what I've said. I wish I could. Obviously, that's not possible. But I do hope that this can be a teachable moment for anybody that doesn't realize how offensive that word can be coming out of a white person's mouth in context or out of context. My sincere and humble apologies. I wish there was more that I could say, but hopefully at least some of you will accept this and understand where I'm coming from. My apologies. And much love. My sincere, deepest apologies. And much love.
A guy who was later confronted by one of his friends on the podcast and then forgot that it was being recorded and then admitted that he sold out to Spotify.
Anytime anything gets big enough,
right,
you're gonna get like that. There's gonna be strings attached. You know?
Yeah, that's the criticism of me being on Spotify.
Yeah, how's that been? How's the movement?
They don't give a man.
They don't care what you do?
They haven't given me a hard time at all. There's a few episodes they didn't want on their platform that I was like, okay, I don't care.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, they don't care what I say. I got full free speech, but they did give me the call and said, hey, you know what? We don't want you talking about these things. We don't want these certain guests on the platform. Hint, hint. Me, on the other hand, I'm just an old school, truly independent YouTuber who never sold out to mainstream media or Conservative Inc., which is kind of mainstream media light. So subscribe to my channel for new here, because if you found the channel, it's a miracle that you're here because of the shadow banning. And if you're a regular subscriber, share my videos on your social media feeds and give me a shout out urging people to subscribe. Maybe, just maybe, we could get up to 2 million subscribers, because the channel, as you probably have known, has been frozen at 1.8 something for years. So stay tuned and I will see you soon.